Saving Mary by Deidre Haverlock. I remember a freezing January night. I was particularly uncomfortable because I was wearing shorts, loose denim shorts worn away at the seams and bleached by the summer sun. The cuffs were rolled up to my thighs and curled tight. Black stockings purchased from Le Chateau covered my legs. Grunge was in and would not leave, not until the late 1990s. We, my boyfriend and I, were approaching a bungalow. It would have a typical L-shaped layout, three bedrooms on the main floor, one bath up, one down, perhaps an ensuite, the kind all my friends were raised in. They were mansions to me. "Where's your couch and all that stuff?" "Don't know. You poor?" "I guess." Up the sidewalk we went and on toward the front door where the porch light gleamed in the frozen darkness, and an intimidating, glassy, and inquisitive peephole glowered down at me. The year was 1993, just mere months after the account of this book takes place, and what I was doing here was a sharp point of contention. After all, I had been persuaded, against everything in me, to attend, here and now, a Bible study. My boyfriend reached out and pressed the doorbell. "Take a deep breath," I told myself. Icy air flooded my lungs. A light flicked on in the house. Footsteps came near. Who were these people? Would they ask me questions? My stomach tightened. The door opened. It was then I decided that I would keep me well to myself. My past was nobody's business. I stepped in, shuffled off my hiking boots, and followed a youngish man to a circa 1970s basement. As I descended the green shag stairs, my mind was relentless. I envisioned all sorts of dreaded Christian stereotypes swarming around me, most of them harassing me with hugs. However, surprisingly, on this particularly miserable winter's night, after a calm hour of harmless singing, rather sincere praying, and somewhat interesting discussion, I deduced that perhaps Bible studies weren't such ominous things after all. But then, from seemingly out of nowhere, she arose. This keen-eyed woman. She arose from an old, mustard-yellow velvet chair with one thin hand stretched toward me, her attentive eyes unwavering. Her smile was modest, yet strangely knowing. She arose like a peculiar form of the Phantom of Death, meaning she wore no black. Instead, she was dressed with the popular floral patterns of the early 1990s. Her course was fixed on me. I was the destination she sought. It was my time. My number was up. Whether she had it in her mind to hug me, I wasn't quite sure. I braced myself for the worst possible outcome. But instead of inflicting me with the light touch of her spindly arms and her poly-blend dress, the woman ceased her crossing. She stopped mere feet in front of me. Bewildered and anxious, I opened my mouth, but she spoke first. Softly, enigmatically. "God spoke to me," she said. "He said to tell you that you remind him of Mary, Mary Magdalene, the woman from whom Jesus cast out seven demons." My breath caught, lungs frozen at the point of expansion. Abruptly turning, I glared at my soon-to-be ex-boyfriend. "It's late," I blurted. I then lunged for my purse. Hastily, I fled, escaping back into the night, never to return. Bible studies, from then on, definitely became ominous things to be avoided at all costs. However, the words of that woman haunted me through the years, and even though I had originally been intent on keeping my peculiar life story rather hush-hush, I slowly began thinking, maybe being like Mary Magdalene isn't so bad a thing. Soon after this, I resolved to one day write, not just another book on exorcism. So despite the overwhelmingly gloomy topic of this book, and although it may seem totally unimaginable from its bleak beginning, please come to think of my life as not only a horror story, but also a love story, because only perfect love casts out all fear. This is my story. I am the modern-day Mary Magdalene.